We take our usual Vent Stay turn now on the Jefferson Exchange directly into our Vent Stay segment, your chance to vent on topics in the news.
I'm Emily Curitan, joining Jeff for Vent Stay as usual. This week, we're going deep into election issues. Today, it's all about education on the ballot. Both states offer multiple ballot measures, propositions they're called in California, affecting education directly in some way. So, Jeff, with our survey this week, we tried to give people a look at public education and policy surrounding it through the lens of personal experiences. Quite simply, we're asking, how well did your K through 12 years prepare you for the next steps in life? We asked people who stopped by jeffexchange.org to answer that in a few words, and we also got responses by posting our survey on Facebook. You can still find it there. Kristen and Kaiser wrote in, I don't feel like school prepared me for the real world. And, Jeff, that seems to be the majority opinion in a nutshell.
We have Sarah in Redding who says, I'm a mom of three and daycare costs more than I can earn working. In our area, a career in my educated field brings in a minimum wage income with no benefits. I learned at the age of 33 that I've been dyslexic my entire life. Pretty bummed that none of my teachers caught on. I feel the most valuable thing I learned in school was how to fit in, read my peers, anticipate their reactions, and get along in the social pecking order. So lessons in conformity for Sarah and Redding. Did your public education prepare you for adulthood? How or how well? 800-838-3760 as we talk about education in the context of the ballot measures and propositions on both sides of the state line. 800-838-3760 to get in on the education conversation by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org.
We got this response at the 11th hour here coming out of Reading, no name given. They said their education prepared them well, but it took place before 1970 when people paid for social services. That, in the words of one of our commenters. So how have you seen education change over the years, and how do you view today's questions on the ballot in light of those changes? On the Oregon side, we've got Measure 98. It's state funding for dropout prevention and college readiness, also frequently slugged as dropout prevention and college readiness there. Measure 99 is lottery money for outdoor schools in Oregon. And Measure 95 would allow public universities to invest in equities, answering that question of how to pay not only for secondary education, but higher ed as well.
California's got Proposition 58, which is about multilingual education. That would walk back the strictures of Prop 227 several years ago. Proposition 51 is a bond issue, nearly $9 billion for schools and community college buildings. And Proposition 55 is not education specifically, but it would extend the income tax hike put in place a couple of years ago for all services in the state of California.
In light of these questions, we have a couple of for you today. How does your own experience with public ed inform your vote? Did K through 12 prepare you for the adult world? The majority answer to that question on our survey was no. Johnny in Ashland says she wished for more art classes. In her own words, my social studies classes did not prepare me for an understanding of the world. My math classes also did not prepare me for the calculations that would actually be helpful with daily living. Social skills, oy. Those were mostly about popularity, nothing about kindness, caring, and compassion. Cooking could have been true cooking, like with vegetables, but all I recall is Bisquick. Sewing was the most practical and helpful thing, and I would have liked more of that, but I wasn't allowed to take mechanics. Wow, not allowed to take mechanics. So thanks to Johnny and Ashlyn for recalling her experience with K through 12 schools. Now we want to hear about yours.
I'm old enough to remember those days myself. The guys took shop, and the women took the home economics classes. In fact, there was a course in my high school called Kitchen Survival for Men, which I took, so I survived. I just want to know what your thoughts, though, are. We want to hear from you on this Vents Day. What are your thoughts about the good that education did for you, and in the context of the ballot measures on both sides of the state line, how might you be considering voting? How do you make those decisions? This is Vents Day on the Exchange. We're going to hear from you at 800-838-3760 by phone, email jx@jeffnet.org. Back with your calls in 1 minute. Eight 36 on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley.
And I'm Emily Curitan, and it's Vents Day here on the Jefferson Exchange. We want to hear from you. Our topic today is education, your own experiences with K through 12, and also how you feel about a slew of ballot measures and initiatives coming up in both Oregon and California. We want to hear from you at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org.
There are three ballot measures on each state ballot that deal with educational issues, either directly or somewhat less directly, like at California's income tax increase continuation. Let's get what you're thinking, though. What did education do for you, and how does it help you decide on what your decisions on what to choose for, yes or no, on the ballot measures that come up on this or any other election? 800-838-3760 to join us by phone. By email, it's jx@jeffnet.org.
And as we look at these personal experiences, Jeff, that people sent in through our survey and also calling in, we are considering what's on the ballot, as you mentioned, in California and Oregon. On the Oregon side of things, one of the big ones is Measure 98. It's a push to increase funding for some of the programs that one of our survey respondents, Johnny, remembers fondly from before the break. We heard that she wasn't allowed to take shop way back in the day, but she wished there'd been more of that and more art classes, more career technical training. Supporters refer to Measure 98 as the Career Tech Education in All Oregon High Schools initiative. It appears on your ballot if you're in Oregon as the Oregon State Funding for Dropout Prevention and College Readiness Initiative. Supporters include a former governor, groups like Stand for Children, United Way of Jackson County, and a litany of teachers groups. There actually isn't any organized opposition to Measure 98 that I was able to find. I did speak with a spokesperson for the Yes for 98 coalition yesterday. He says 98 is designed to address Oregon's high school dropout rate in three distinct ways, all using state funding. Let's hear from Measure 98 spokesperson Peter Zuckerberg now.
This measure doesn't raise taxes. It doesn't take money away from existing programs. The way it works is really simple. Every year, the budget increases because of population growth or a growing economy. As a result, there is new revenue that has not been allocated to anything else. This measure requires that about 1% of that new revenue goes to the priorities established by Measure 98. The thing is, school districts actually can decide how to spend the money among three areas. They can decide, oh, do we want to spend this money on vocational and career technical education, or does it make more sense for us to spend it on dropout prevention, or do we want to spend it on college prep classes? That is up to the school districts, because we assume that the school districts know where they need it the most.
So that's Peter Zuckerberg, a spokesperson for the Yes for 98 coalition. He laid out the three prongs of the Oregon measure there: more career tech programs, money for dropout prevention services, think about mentorship, counseling, tutoring, and the third piece would be establishing more college prep classes and giving every district in Oregon about $800 per student to do this using new revenue in the state budget. We are talking about these ballot measures in light of your experiences with K through 12 education in Oregon or California, and looks like we've got a couple of callers on the line.
Let's go to Jim in Grants Pass first. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Vince Day. Hi, Jim.
Yes, good morning. One of the big comments we learned, and I know I learned between the fifth and ninth grade, that most of what they called education was just promoting government employee, i.e. teachers, job, period.
Mm-hmm.
They were one-sided. The only ones that a lot of us had any true respect for were the ones that during the summer involved themselves in people activities, you know, real estate, construction, other things where they made contact for the true needs and working with people, not just doing what they were told to tell us to do.
So you're saying that a teacher was a better teacher if they did something other than teach in the summertime?
Oh, absolutely, or even other. I appreciate that some sort of maybe 60-40 balance that all classes from at least through middle school and into high school should be people from Commerce and teachers and government employees able to show young people that people from Commerce and government employees can work hand in hand.
So real world experience, I think, counts for a lot more for teaching
people. It's what you feel from that teacher, not always what's said and read, what you feel.
All right. Thanks for the thoughts, Jim. Appreciate that. Which reminds me, as he talks about this, that it wasn't just a matter of teachers having different jobs in the summertime. One of my science teachers in high school had a pocket protector from, I don't know, bedding barn or something like that, because that's where his nighttime job was.
Mm-hmm.
He worked to supplement his income working at a sales job selling mattresses in the evening. So teachers back in those days when the salaries were lower had to have other jobs. So it's an interesting perspective, though, to think that he thinks, in Jim's case, that they made better teachers.
I think many teachers these days actually still have second jobs. In my experience, with my own generation and people who have been, you know, credentialed in the last 5 or 10 years, certainly know anecdotally quite a few of them who work two jobs in order to have families, own homes, own cars, and pay off their student debt. So that's certainly a vein. Talking about education and the need for happy, healthy, well-compensated teachers. And as Jim was saying, there's some of these soft skills that you get from schools that you're not going to find necessarily on your ballot, talking about education policy, but teaching kids to have self-confidence and learn the social skills. Laura in Blue River took our survey, and she credits her teachers and her parents for her successes after K-12 public education. Laura says, I have my master's degree. My academic success depended on my solid early public education. My teachers were creative, but mostly old school, chalkboards and basics with few considerations for my self-esteem. My self-esteem actually grew as my parents and teachers held me accountable for my own learning. But most students had a grasp of the English language. Most students came to school with breakfast in their tummies. Although there are challenges in our current system, we do our students a disservice by not holding them accountable for their own learning. That's coming from Laura in Blue River.
So what do you think? I mean, what are schools doing in terms of educating our kids now? What do they do in terms of educating our kids when you were a kid? Has that changed appreciably over time? And how does that work into the context of this election, or any election for that matter, when we have multiple ballot measures dealing with education? Let's get your thoughts on this, Vince Day. 800-838-3760 for your story personally about your experience with school, or what you see more broadly as what we should be doing with school in this day and age. 800-838-3760 by phone. Email is jx@jeffnet.org.
Another proposition on the California side that we're considering today through the lens of these personal experiences would be California's Proposition 58. That would roll back an earlier law requiring English-only instruction. That would have been Prop 227, which passed in 1998 and officially ended most bilingual education and required non-English speakers to be taught in English a majority of the time, often in immersion where only English is spoken. So we've got a clip here of California State Senator Ricardo Lara, who's been a proponent of repealing Prop 227 for years. It's finally on the ballot now as Proposition 58. And here's Senator Lara making the case in economic terms for a national panel in 2014.
If we want to continue to be a global economy, we're going to have to ensure that our global workforce understands and communicates with each other. And that means that Californians have to speak more than just English. You know, thousands of children in California woke up speaking another language other than English. And so we have this natural reserve already that makes us competitive globally. Why not exploit that?
So a natural reserve there of bilingual speakers in California. Senator Lara wants to encourage that rather than banning bilingual instruction in our schools. We want to know what you think, both about things going on with the ballot and your own experiences in primary and secondary public schools. Were you properly prepared? Do you see students today being properly prepared? Do you think that there's a call for more parental accountability, as our survey respondent Laura did? And if so, what form would that take? Time to hear from you on Vents Day, 800-838-3760 to join us by phone, or jx@jeffnet.org.
I think it was Laura's comments I want to come back to as well, because she was talking about most of the kids came to school with breakfast in their tummies, most had a grasp of the English language. What's your own recollection of what your school days were like? What were some of the things that kids struggled against? Because we all knew kids in school who didn't seem like they were quite adequately prepared by language, by disposition, by how well fed and clothed they were. What are your perceptions of how schools have been able to overcome those shortcomings and charge kids up well enough to get them educated? Education, the main discussion point here on the Jefferson Exchange, within the context not only of our own lives and our own educations, but what's coming up on the ballot in our states in November. Three props in California, three measures in Oregon that are pretty closely aimed at education. 800-838-3760 by phone. Email is jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Charlie in Roseburg, if the button will push. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Vince Day.
Good morning.
Hi.
Well, you know, I grew up back in the 60s in Alabama, which probably had the poorest schools in the country. Poor people, many. Mm-hmm. And social unrest. I watched Governor George Wallace stand in the doorway and get moved aside by the federal people, and the moved him aside and let a little black girl go to school.
At the University of Alabama, yeah.
No, that was in a junior high school. That was in an elementary school down from the junior high in the town I lived in.
Okay.
But I went to trade school because I flunked out of most every class I had.
Mm-hmm.
But I learned from my mother and my father and other people. And I went to parties. My father was a person who worked for Thiokol as a governor inspector. And when they had parties over, the AFGE or whatever, all that stuff that he did, and AMVETS and all those clubs.
Uh-huh.
I saw people that were rocket scientists in Huntsville.
Oh, is that where you're from, Huntsville?
Yeah.
I lived in Huntsville. Met my wife there.
And, you know, people would be standing around talking, and they'd look down at me and go, and that son is rocket science.
So what?
And it was. I went to school with Wernher von Braun's daughter.
Mm-hmm. You probably know my wife.
What I say about education is, maybe the question shouldn't be what education gives you. Maybe it should be what you take from whatever you're given in education. What do your parents give you? What do your people give you? What do you come away with? Because I went to J.F. Drake Trade School, which was predominantly black, I guess. My instructor was black. Most of the students were black. We called them colored people back then. Yeah, just a name. But I took away from that, and I went away, and I made a career as a mechanic and a career in the war, and my arm got blown off and put back together. And then as a mechanic later, I picked up a gearbox or whatever, and it smoked off, and they finally got I was in Oregon by then.
Mm-hmm.
And they got work comp to admit that it was a pre-existing condition aggravated by the terms of my employment, so they paid for putting my arm back on.
All right, but it sounds like the overall message you're trying to give us here, Charlie, is that you really have to take an education from life.
Yeah.
In whatever way it's offered.
But I went on to graduate magna cum laude from Southern Oregon College at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And to professional school, and made a career. But it's what you take from your education, wherever you get it, and what you do with it, not what it gives you.
All right. Thanks for the thoughts, Charlie. Very good to hear from you, and nice to talk to somebody from North Alabama.
And sure is nice to hear that Southern voice here on the Jefferson Exchange. Charlie raises a lot of interesting points there about life experience. I mean, I think there's an element that I heard in there of this idea of helping yourself, which... We got an interesting comment from Kira in Ashland, somewhat to that point. She mentioned that her time in K-12 and particularly high school made her feel like she was actually unlearning what she needed to know for the real world. So some of the social parameters there and the strict conformity, in her own words, she says, reflecting back, some of what I think would make me a better person, I never learned in the first place in school. So, Kira and Ashlyn taking what she wanted to learn from outside of the classroom walls.
What did a particular teacher do that affected you? Is there one teacher you can remember above all others who really had an effect on you, who made the light go on, who sent the voltage through your chair or something and made you sit up and take notice and think, wow, okay, now I really got to pay attention. Who was that teacher for you, or what was the course that really rang the bell for you? I'm using a lot of metaphors here, but which one really got you going in terms of getting engaged in your own education. 800-838-3760 to join this conversation on Vince Day by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. And then back to the ballot. What's your general approach to school measures on the ballot? Do you generally vote for school funding? Do you go over with a fine-tooth comb? Are there votes on school measures you're especially happy about in the past, or votes you regret based on the outcomes? Do you think your votes on prior school measures have made a difference? 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Mark in Reading, welcome to The Exchange on Vince Day.
Good morning.
Hi.
Yeah, I don't know a lot about I don't know very much at all about the ballot measures that are on the ballot here in California, graduate school, but I can say that in general it's very much better for a person to be bilingual than it is to be monolingual. And that one needs to start learning a second language in one's early youth, not when one is in high school. It's too late by then to really get started at being able to be bilingual. It's the kind of thing that if people are going to learn a second language and be able to use it effectively throughout their life, they need to start learning it in grade school.
Okay.
I don't know if that's planned here or not, but I would sure appreciate it if it were.
All right. Thanks for the thoughts, Mark. Appreciate that. So yeah, Prop 58 is the one that deals with the multilingual education. It basically rolls back Prop 227, which changed the system in which people were generally taught in the language they came from and then eased into English. And this is more of an immersion-type program that exists under Prop 227, although, as we read, there's been a bit of chipping away at the strictures of Prop 227 over the years. In some districts, Los Angeles Unified School District, for example, identifies a majority of time spent teaching in English as 51% because they have so many Spanish speakers in the district.
Mm. And if you're a California voter, you will see Prop 58 on your ballot described as the LEARN Initiative, Language, Education, Acquisition, and Readiness Now. We group that with two other propositions coming out of the Golden State dealing directly with education. Another one is Prop 51, which would pass nearly $9 billion in bonds for new school buildings. That's $3 billion for the construction of new facilities altogether, and another $500 million for charter schools, an interesting nugget in there. We didn't hear from anybody on our survey, Jeff, who had a charter school experience. We just asked people if they came up in the public system. So if there's a charter school teacher or a someone who has matriculated from a charter school listening, we'd love to hear from you about your experiences and how they stack up with some of the more mainstream public school thoughts that we're hearing echoed on The Exchange today. 800-838-3760 to join us, or you can email jx@jeffnet.org.
Now we have an email here from Mike in Medford. He says, I spent my K-12 days in the Medford School District. 15 years ago, it was pretty good. Having studied poli-sci in college, I can definitely say civics is drastically needed in high school. Most college-educated students don't have much of a grasp on politics, let alone high school students. This had already led to the drastic demise of the democratic process. Democracy doesn't work without a minimum level of education. So let's pose the question in the way that Mike suggests. What is not being taught in school right now that should be taught? And there's so many different strictures. I remember years ago an interview with the outgoing president of the Phoenix Talent School District, the outgoing superintendent, who said, you know, when I first came into education, there were like four things we had to teach. It was math, science, history, and I feel like the governor of Texas now, but, you know, forgetting that last thing. The point was that
social
that
studies, perhaps.
Over the course of his years in the education business, the list had lengthened by so much about the various things that they had to spend time on. And for that matter, when you look at the ballot, do you think, oh, one more program that we're supposed to add here as well? So that would perhaps get into the area of Measure 99, the Oregon Outdoor School Lottery Fund, would divert $22 million a year to that special fund. The idea is to provide outdoor school for all fifth and sixth graders in the state, including a sleepaway camp to learn about science. So all kinds of ballot measures out there on both sides of the state line, to say nothing of any local school measures, local bond issues, things like that. What do you think about your own education and this election and what you're saying with your votes in this election? 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org to join the conversation now.
We are seeing somewhat of a split in these ballot measures, Jeff, where we're looking at, say, Measure 98 in Oregon, which deals with providing a nugget of funding per student to add programs like Career Tech, bring back shop, say, sewing, things that are more hard skill oriented, and also dropout prevention measures in Oregon, which has a woefully high rate of that. And then on the flip side, all about the money, how to pay for these things. Proposition 55 in California would renew income tax increases on wealthier Californians, passed first as Prop 30 in 2012. So that would mean if you make less than $250,000 a year, you won't notice a change in your income tax if Prop 55 passes. However, those funds are not specifically earmarked for education. We did do a little digging here, and we found some words from Cecil Canton, a tenured professor at criminal justice at CSU in Sacramento. He makes the case for how funding for K through 12 through Prop 55 will help higher ed as well.
Prop 55 needs to pass because we need the money in K through 12 and the community colleges. All those students are going to be moving through the system and ultimately coming to the California State University system or the University of California system. We need to make sure we have sufficient resources for those young people. The legislative analyst's office has already said that we need to make up, we need more people with college degrees, and we need to have Prop 55 passed in order to continue that trend.
The case for Prop 55. What do you think about public education? Let's go to Eric and Eugene.
Welcome to the Exchange on Vince Day. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
Go ahead.
So you were asking about teachers mm-hmm. that made an impact on people, and I was a student of the public education system, and for most of my experience in the public education system, I would learn to get a grade, and then at the end of the class, I was more likely to forget everything I had just learned. And a teacher that really made an impact on me was a philosophy teacher my senior year in high school, which taught the value of learning for human reasons other than just grade reasons. And it totally flipped my world upside down, and I regret not having the class a lot sooner in my education experience.
Did you appreciate the education you got after that point? I mean, did you take it a different approach and you weren't just seeking the grade?
Well, I didn't do much college, but yeah, I mean, I actually became a better learner just on my own. And so it gave me a foundation at that point to learn to improve my life, yeah.
The foundations that you can't get anywhere else. Philosophy, we won't see much mention of that on the ballot, but it does make a difference. Thanks for that, Eric and Eugene. I'm Emily Curitan, and this has been Vince Day.
I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for joining us. Another discussion of items on the ballot as we go through Vince Day up between now and Election Day, or at least until the ballots drop on the Oregon side. Thanks for listening to the Jefferson Exchange on JPR.